All right, so hello everybody, my name is Josef, and today I will talk about the Sculpt.OS. Well, actually, since you can see at the from the title of my talk, which is called Exploring Sculpt.OS, I will not only talk about the system, but I will also show you the system, actually. So, I've structured my talks in basically four parts. Basically, I will just start with giving you some background information about the underlying technology that is used, namely the GNOME.OS framework to build the Sculpt.OS. Then I will give you a brief overview of the Sculpt system itself, followed by how you can extend the system by basically installing software on the running system. And we skip the fourth point and we'll go straight to the roadmap. So there are some things we still have planned for this year. And all right. So let me start by giving you some background information. I just have to use the other slides because it's that will be a little bit complicated. I just have to look for the proper slides, otherwise I will get confused. Will be bad. It doesn't matter. So let's just move on. The problem is that by now we are surrounded by an increasing number of computing devices, and those computing devices are running commodity operating systems, which are highly complex. And since the vendors mostly want to innovate quickly, they accept the reliance on such highly complex systems. But on the other hand, the key ingredients or the technologies or principles that can be used to build still complex systems, but whose complexity can be better managed, are available but are not employed. And from within the L4 microkernel research community came the idea to explore the practicality of a component-based operating system that uses capabilities to manage the overall complexity of a contemporary commodity system in a better way. So the first idea came in back in 2003. And it took some time, but eventually in 2006, the first prototype was built with some success. In fact, so much success that the people behind the prototype decided to found a company to develop the prototype even further back in 2008. And that is basically how the whole project got started. So, if we talk about the complexity of contemporary commodity systems, how can you structure or provide a new system structure if you disregard all the assumptions that are normally made when you build a traditional operating system? What are the key features that such a system architecture should provide? Well, as I said, the commodity systems normally consist of a complex global system policy, where it's difficult to have fine-grained control over the different components within the system. So what we would like to have in a new clean slate system architecture would be an architecture that follows the principle of least privilege, where each component only has the access rights and or access to the resources that are needed for the component to fulfill its function. And we want to have a mechanism where we can express exactly this property, which basically leads us to capability-based security. Another point is that we have mixed criticality. That means that we have complex components that we don't fully trust, and we have security-sensitive functions we also want to run on the system, and we want to run them on the same system at the same time without that the untrusted components can influence the security-critical functions. So we can achieve that by strictly isolating each component and structuring the system in a way that we can assess the application-specific trusted computing base. Well, this application-specific trusted computing base is basically the amount of code a component or a program or a user of a program has to trust in order for the program to fulfill its purpose. Commodity systems can be quite large. Another thing is that we want to have a robust system. By now, almost all operating systems provide the illusion that all resources are infinite. And they go to great length to uphold this illusion. Like, for example, if memory becomes scarce, they try to swap out inactive processes to make room for active processes, and apply some heuristics, and eventually if something fails or the whole construct falls down, in the worst case, the OS kernel normally chooses arbitrarily some process that it will kill to free up resources for other processes. And we don't actually want that in our new system. And we actually don't want to have the abstraction of resources at all. So what we want to have is the ability to remove the abstractions, only trade physical resources, but in a way that we can account them, that we can trade them, and that we can track them. Trading them is vital to this concept because since the physical resources are finite, we have to provide the, well, we have to give one component has to give another component access to the resource so that we can utilize the resources more thoroughly. And last but not least, we want to have a system that scales well. And scalability means that we have a variety of use cases, of workloads, basically, that we all want to accommodate with one system. And we can achieve this by structuring the way in the system in a recursive way so that we can compose complex systems by using simple building blocks. Naturally, the Gnode OS architecture is such a system that contains all those four key features. A Gnode system is normally structured as a tree where each parent owns the component. Or owns its child. And by owns, the ownership is defined as having the responsibility as well as ultimate control over the other component. For example, the child has to provide the resources that are needed to create its child. But in return, it retains the control of the child. That means it can restrict the system view of the child, it could, restrict the access to the resources of the surrounding system of the child, and obviously it can also control the lifetime of the child. So since a child can also have children, you will end up with a system where we have a recursive system, and each component in this system gets assigned, well, since I told you before, we don't want to abstract physical resources. In the Gnode OS architecture, we have a budget of physical resources. And this budget can be used to either access the resource, or you can pass along the budget within the along the branches of the tree. So components can trade its budget. This dynamically trading of budgets enables you to basically provide services without paying for them. Like, for example, I have a frame buffer multiplexer, a resource multiplexer, that enables clients to display pictures on one frame buffer instead of the resource multiplexer having to spend its own resources, each component that wants to display an image of the frame buffer will donate some of its budget to the resource multiplexer. And as I said, those trading mechanisms enables the system to really utilize the resources in a proper way. Since we talk about application-specific trusted computing base, if we look at the figure, at the bottom we see the reddish box, which is basically our microkernel. The microkernel is part of every TCB of every component in the system, but its only job is to provide for one threads of execution, so you can run components. It has to provide protections domains so that all components that are run within the system are isolated from each other, and it needs to provide a mechanism to for the components to communicate with each other in a controlled way. All other system functionality like device drivers, file system, protocol stacks, runtime environments, or virtual machines, for example, security sensitive functions, and so on, are provided as component within the tree. They are not part of the underlying microkernel, and so you can structure your system in a way that it becomes easy for you to assess the trusted computing base of one specific component. For example, if we look at the yellow box, the yellow box has several parents and grandparents, and the red area denotes basically the trusted computing base. That means all components that the yellow box has to trust. But if we look at the whole picture, we can just completely discard the right side of the tree, because the right side of the system is completely unrelated to the yellow box. So that means, for example, we could run some huge complex web browser on the right side, and we could run our GNU-PG or whatever security crypto component on the left side, and it isn't possible for the components to influence each other. Building on that, it makes sense that you locate critical components as near to the root of the tree as possible, because, well, in this case, the trusted computing base is small. And that enables you to build secure systems, complex systems, but you can manage the complexity in that you build a system consisting of multiple smaller systems. And, well, the concrete implementation of the GNodeOS architecture is the GNodeOS framework. It's basically a construction kit for special purposes OSs written in C++. It scales from embedded systems to general purpose computing. That means it runs on systems with at least 4 megabytes of memory available, and, well, obviously also on my laptop, which has much more resources. Since even the kernel is just one component of the system, the GNodeOS framework runs on multiple kernels, and we are actually, all components are binary compatible between the kernels, which is a nice feature, because you can debug your component on Linux and later on deploy it on the target, which runs a microkernel. One of the things is, the framework as a whole just provides the means that components can communicate in a controlled manner and can access resources in a controlled manner. And in the current implementation, in the concrete implementation of the GNodeOS framework, every program is executed in its isolated sandbox and can only communicate via a specific mechanism with the outside the surrounding components. The OS framework consists of about 100 of ready-to-use components. since I already mentioned that all the system functionality that normally is located in the kernel is provided by components within the system, would require much effort to write all those components from scratch. Therefore, we borrow basically the drivers from other operating systems. For example, our FrameBuffer driver is ported from the Linux kernel for Intel graphics cards. We also use the Intel wireless stack, the Linux wireless stack, as well as the Intel wireless device drivers from Linux for our wireless driver. The OpenBSD audio subsystem provides the foundation for our audio driver, and we use NetBSD as the RAM kernel of NetBSD as file system provider. So we collect all the functionality that we need to actually run the system from other open source projects, which is quite nice, actually. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel and implement the drivers on our own. Of course, Gnode.js framework is also open source. It's dual licensed. The open source license is the AGPL version 3, and there are also commercial license options available. Yeah, that's just a nice picture which shows you some components. On one side, in the middle, you see the various kernels the Gnode.js framework runs on. The bluish boxes denote the device drivers. And actually, it doesn't matter which components you actually see here. It's just a rough overview. Of course, there is documentation. There is the book called Gnode Foundations, which explains more thoroughly how the system came to be and explains the technical details in depth. I encourage you to just take a look at the book because it's nice written and it's really worth your time to just read it. Okay, finally, I will talk about Sculpt. By now, since I said the Gnode.js framework was by now only used to build general purpose systems, back in 2014, we said, well, it's about time that we use the system on a daily basis for doing our work. So we created the static Turmmiller scenario, which basically is a system where you can run dynamically, at runtime can change the components you run. For example, you can start multiple virtual machines, you can start your web browser, your POSIX environment, and so on. But it's static in the sense that it's still limited to integration time. That means if you want to exchange components or update components, you would still have to build your own system image and boot your system image. Fast forward 4 years, static doesn't scale well, so we thought, well, we need a dynamic system, a system that is easily accessible and shapeable actually at runtime. So we built the Sculpt OS. Sculpt is short for sculpture, basically, which denotes the intent the system has. And the first version we released in February, that was the version Sculpt for the early adopters. In this version, you still had to build your own system image. And there was just a minimal POSIX shell for interacting with the system to do your administrative work, basically. Back in May, we released Sculpt for the Curious, which for the first time in years provided a ready-to-boot system image of Gnode, which works on real machines as well as in virtual machines. And it also featured a graphical user interface that aids the user by doing some administrative tasks. So we are not confined to just using the POSIX shell. So let's look at how the system is structured. Well, you will see that it reassembles the figure I've shown you before, in that it's a tree. Basically, and the tree hosts different subsystems, and each subsystem has a specific use case or a purpose, basically. And at the bottom, there is still your microkernel, and now we will briefly look into the in each subsystem. Let's start with the static system. The static system hosts the part of the system that does not change at runtime. It provides a frame buffer resource multiplexer, our nitpicker GUI server, as well as components that enable other components or subsystems basically to report its their state, to access boot modules, for example, like the ROM component. The ROM service enables you to load ELF binaries from the boot image, as well as there are two file systems. One, the reportf file system that provides a nice file-based view on each of the reports, as well as the config file system, which provides the storage location for each for the configuration of each of the components. And you have some global policy, well, which will I go into more detail later. All right, so let's start with the first subsystem, the driver subsystem, actually. The driver subsystem contains all the components that are needed to bootstrap the system, like your platform driver, your input driver, your frame buffer driver, your storage driver, and so on. Don't be intimidated by the figure. That's the complexity you normally have also in your traditional OS kernel or system. But in contrast to the traditional system on Gnode, the complexity is hidden in plain sight. But luckily, you can also choose to ignore it. Basically, treat the driver subsystem as a black box which transforms low-level resources, like, for example, the I/O memory, the I/O ports, or interrupts into higher-level resources, like, for example, here the platform resource, input resource, frame buffer resource, and so on. And the other subsystems can access these resources, but they don't care about the details. Like they don't care that the device driver accesses I/O memory. They just care about that the graphics driver provides a frame buffer service so they can paint something onto the screen. The next subsystem is the so-called Leitzentrale, which is basically the German term for control center and is the subsystem that hosts the administrative interface. In this case, there are on the right-hand side, you see a component which displays the system log. And on the left-hand side, you see, well, since it's an old slide, normally it would be the sculpt manager that you see here. But in a sense, you have one component that controls the system and the other component shows some system state. And I can actually show you that. For example, if I fade in the Leitzentrale, on the right side, you see the system log, and on the left side, you see the sculpt manager. The sculpt manager itself is basically also a subsystem. It hosts various components. For one, there is one component, the system agent, basically, that monitors the system state of the various driver components, and another component which provides the graphical view and also handles the user input. And yeah, that's basically your administrative interface if you interact with the sculpt system. Yeah, as I said, the system is managed by the sculpt manager component. The managed configurations are stored within the config file system in the managed directory. There are some inbuilt heuristics, for example, which default file system is used when the system boots up and so on. But you can also choose to override all the automatically managed configurations. And you can access the system via the inspect option of the graphical user interface. And we will exactly do that. So let me just show you what's in the config file system. Well, just to show you the system, as you have seen in the previous slides, this is basically your config file system and that's your report file system. We will go into the config file system and there we have a bunch of files that control certain aspects of the system. For example, let me just show you the manage directory. It contains the files of the subsystems that are automatically managed from the Sculpt Manager. But since I now use the system I normally use and not an empty system like I would like to do, because the PDF viewer didn't work the way I wanted to, I will show you my own config files. For example, within the input filter config file, you can configure the input subsystem. And in those files, you can, for example, add key remappings. I'm a Vivid Vim user and I don't use my caps lock very much. So naturally, the first thing I do is remap the caps lock to the escape key, because it's much more comfortable to press it with my pinky finger. So. But what I can show you is if I go to the RAID settings and I press A, you see the key is repeated very fast. If I change the setting and press A again, it takes somewhat longer. Another thing we have, as we have seen, frame buffer resource multiplexer is also part of the static system, but we can change the configuration of the frame buffer quite easily, the multiplexer. Here we have different domains, and as you can see, there is one domain that basically just hosts the pointer, and another domain which hosts the Leitzentrale and so on. And what I can actually do is I can change the origin of one domain. For example, if I just change the origin of the Leitzentrale domain to the pointer, suddenly the Leitzentrale follows my pointer movement because it's anchored to the pointer position. And as I've said, there is some global policy in the static system. And here you see the global key management. For example, when I open the input filter again, as you can see, certain F keys are remapped to other keys. And those keys are used in the global policy to trigger events. For example, if I press F12, the Leitzentrale will fade in and fade out. And that's basically how you can configure your system. All right, let's go back. Finally, let's look at the runtime subsystem. The runtime subsystem is actually the subsystem where the user runs its applications. For example, the virtual machines, the web browser, the editor, the POSIX subsystem, and so on. It is also managed by the Sculpt Manager, but it can also be controlled by the user. And namely, the user can change the deploy configuration file. And now I just closed the PDF view, but it's fine. I'm actually already in my deploy configuration file, and you can see that there are also already a backdrop. So let me just close the component. No. Okay, so the backdrop is gone. And what the user basically can do, the user can select the components, the programs he wants to run by just editing the configuration file. And what we can do, we can just spawn some nice... There's the backdrop back again. Just let me remove the backdrop once again, because I just wanted to show you the program which draws some object. And we can edit the configuration file that is used by the component to, in this case, we changed the config file to use another painter, for the configuration for the component, and now the component uses another painter to paint itself. Let's start the backdrop again and the PDF viewer. So for now, what we have seen so far is how I can start already installed components or programs for that matter. What I now want to show you how you actually can install components on the Sculpt OS. To install software, we need a location where we can temporarily store the archives we are downloading. We need a location where we can store the installed software. We need the source where we can download the archives from. And we need a public key to verify that the archives we have downloaded are actually properly signed and not tampered with. So it's your basic package manager workflow. In five steps, you install the software. What's noteworthy here is that on Gnode or on Sculpt for that matter, it's also a subsystem which is orchestrated by the download manager. And the way it works is that we first look for all the missing dependencies. We look up the information we need to find the source of the missing dependencies. We fetch the missing dependencies, we verify them, and we extract them. But what is normally done in one program on traditional systems is done in Gnode this in multiple components or programs, basically. As I said, the download manager controls the subsystem. And at first, it will start the depo query component that will look up the missing dependencies. It will therefore look into the file system when normally the software is installed in. That's basically the depo directory. It will then look up the missing information, which is also stored in the depo directory. Afterwards, it will replace the query component with the fetch UL component, give the component access to the network and write access to the location where the archives are temporarily stored. But it can't access the directory where the software is installed, so it can't tamper with already installed software. Even if there is some bug or somebody exploits the component. After we have downloaded the file, we will replace the fetch_ul program with the verify program, and we will cut all network connection, and we will give the verify component only access to the archives that were just downloaded. And after the verify component has verified that the archives are actually sound, the download manager will start the extract program, which will extract the archives and write them to the proper location. So in a sense, the installation and deployment is synonym on Sculpt. The depo is just a cache that holds the files. I can actually show you how that looks. For example, if I move into my storage device, and there is the depo directory, and there you see multiple directories. For example, in my directory, you will find the download file, which contains the address where the archives are downloaded from, and my public key. And there you also see all the, let's just do the recursive thing. You always see that the all packets are versioned, so you can install multiple versions, and in case a newer version has some missing feature or has some bugs or something like that, you can roll back to an older version by just choosing to run the older version in your configuration file. And it's a user-defined policy. That means that there is no automatism that updates something or tries to run a program without the consent of the user. we will just skip that part and we'll come to the roadmap for this year. Well, by now we have some iterative process where with each Sculpt version we introduce new features, and the next version, which will be released in a few days, will contain some visual composition feature. I can tease it a little bit because here you can see some components that are already running in the, well, let me make that a little bit more clear. Right. Oh. Here you see some components that are running in the runtime environment, and if I click on such a component, it will show me how much resources it's currently using. And we hope that at some point the need to open the shell to interact with the system is reduced to a bare minimum. The graph is the key feature in the Sculpt VC release at the end of August. And well, you already can download the system, you can build packages, you can publish packages, but so far the tooling is somewhat lacking for a community to foster around the Sculpt system. And that we hope to address by the end of the year with our release in November. More details you can find on the roadmap. So far that is it for my part. I hope I don't have rushed too much. Oh, it's actually fine. Thank you for your time. And if you have questions, please ask them.
I'm not sure if I got it quite right, but the slide would be tree-based.
Yes.
Layout. Exactly. So, did I get it right? For example, two applications are sharing the screen buffer. They always have to communicate with their parents and upwards until they are at the root of the tree?
No. That's good. The question was if multiple or two components want to communicate with each other, if they have to traverse the key the tree basically every time back to the root of the tree. They don't. They have to initially, because the parent provides access to the grandparent and the other components. But after you have established the connection, basically you exchange the capabilities. Both components can communicate directly with each other. So you might have some, if that was your intention, you have some latency when you first request the service, because obviously you have to traverse the tree, but later on you can basically communicate without any latency. All right. Another question? All right. Thank you for your time.